Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Creekside Room is Verlin Brown, who will be speaking on how to fix men. So let's listen in on Verlin.
I know that title must have scared some people off, but...
As long as there are no sharp instruments.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get started on how to fix men. I'll go through it real quick. We'll have some discussion, and then I'll let you go in time for lunch, of course. So we won't stay too long today. First of all, I put up here adapt. He talks about adapting, and that men should learn to, people should learn how to adapt to the changing life. And I talked about in previous sessions about stage one and stage two. In society of stage one, we were mostly concerned about survival. And he says after World War II, we've sort of moved into, gradually been moving into stage two, which is we're more interested in fulfillment since we take survival for granted. That's not such a big issue anymore. One of the things we could do is to, women can change men by their choices of men that they choose to marry. Oftentimes women have married a man who was a killer in a number of ways. When you're worried about survival, you marry a man who's a killer who can kill for you to make sure that you and your family survive. Well, women have carried that on through in the sense that they marry men, they get involved with men who are killers on Wall Street, who are killers in the medical profession or whatever profession they're in. And then women proceed to try to change those men into sensitive men. He says if women want sensitive men, then they should marry sensitive men. They shouldn't marry men who are doctors and lawyers and killers in their profession and then try to turn them into sensitive men.
Now, wait a second. That term killer, that's troublesome. But when you say killer, you mean guys who get things done.
Guys who get things done.
But that
guys,
doesn't mean that they're...
They're killers in their profession.
In the sense
killers that... Killers on Wall Street. Killers, yeah. Guys who go out
win.
And do what they have to do to win, to bring home the money.
Georgia 16.
Yeah. Also, he also talks about cheerleaders. He says instead of having cheerleaders who cheer guys on for being violent, then you should have cheerleaders who also cheer for the sensitive guys, who cheer for guys who are listeners, who cheer for guys who are creative. But you're never going to get men to be sensitive when. Even starting when they're young, they're taught to cheer for, women are taught to cheer for men who are killers on the football field. Men who can go out and knock other men down to score points and that sort of thing. He says so that's another way that society can fix men or change men in that respect. Another way society could change men, if men begin to protest anti-male behavior, anti-male policies that are passed by our legislators and things of that sort. Some examples he gives, like welfare. Welfare kicks people out of the home, kicks men out of the home. It forces women to live without men, and he says that's anti-male. Men should protest for a draft that drafts both men and women to do battle, to do war. That's the way that you can change a man. Another one, well, this is political action. Doctors, lawyers, he says, just like women have taught men not to stand up and go, you know, look at the boobs on that chick. Men need to teach women how not to say, I met this wonderful guy today, he's a lawyer. I met this wonderful guy today, he's a doctor, that our soap operas are full of lawyers, doctors, district attorneys. You don't see a soap opera about a plumber. You don't see a soap opera about a construction worker, you know. And he says that's no different than a soap opera where, and soap operas are full of these beautiful women and successful men. And he says that's, you know, one way to, you know, to stop, women can stop being, from having, from using sexual language or you know, are continually doing that. And men have stopped, men need to stop women from using sexist language that implies that men are success objects. And men need, as women have stopped men from using language that implies that they're sex objects.
You're equating when the guys open up the Playboy magazine, mm-hmm. That's the guy's example of stereotyping women. Mm-hmm. And you're equating that with the women citing status. Mm-hmm. It isn't just doctor, lawyer, but it's status.
Like, who would be a pinup for, who would be a pinup for women? Who's a pinup for women?
You mean like Tom Cruise? Or?
Yeah, Tom Cruise, John Kennedy, Jr.
Rock stars.
These are, but John Kennedy Jr. would be more so, and maybe Tom Cruise, because a lot of times, one of the reasons women get annoyed when men hang up women who are Playboy, I mean, who are centerfolds, is that women say, what does this woman do? She has no mind, she hasn't produced anything, she hasn't done anything, she's just there. Now, the equivalent of that would be like John Kennedy. What has John Kennedy really done? Nothing, really. John Kennedy Jr., he hasn't produced anything.
He took the law exam three times.
He took the law exam three times. And he went into law. I mean, he's got this life. I mean, he just walked into wealth and fame. Now, that's not his fault, but what he says is that this is the equivalent of a female pinup. So one of the things he says is if men are hanging pinups of good-looking women in their offices, you don't get back at them by hanging pinups of good-looking men. You get back at them by hanging pinups of John, you know, John Jr. and Tom, successful men who have made it financially. You know, good-looking men who have made it financially, or, you know, that kind of thing, to get back at men, you know, the pin-up thing. And that men should learn to protest and pass policies in terms of violence against men, not just violence against women. That there is violence against you know, like I said yesterday, there's three times as much violence against men as there are against women, except for rape. Rape is the highest violence against women, but on all other levels, it is much higher, three times as high violence against men as it is against women. And that men should learn to deal with that, to protest that, to bring that to the forefront, to study violence of all kinds, not just focused on violence against women. And then another one he says is sex. Women should be taught and learn how to risk sexual rejection the way men have been taught to risk sexual rejection. That men are taught to initiate sex, which means we're always in the process of having to risk sexual rejection by women. That the way society is set up is that women are responsible for saying what they don't want sexually, but society doesn't allow women to be responsible for what they do want sexually. And that needs to change, And, you know, he says one of the things that happens is that when a guy initiates sex and then this person is rejected, then that person feels powerless. And powerlessness has much to do, has more to do with rape than power. People used to say that rape was an act of power, but actually it's temporary power, but it comes from an act of powerlessness. And when you're always put in a position where you have to do the asking and you run the risk of rejection, you're put in a position of powerlessness. Like a child always asking, like I said the other day, a child going to the, when you're a kid asking your teacher to go to a bath, for something as basic as asking to go to the bathroom, those are acts of powerlessness. So it's that, that kind of thing. Did you have any?
I think it's really changing. The roles are really changing.
Okay.
I think girls ask guys just as much.
Okay.
No, almost as much, but that way. Because I think it's really, really changed.
Okay.
It used to be that way. It used to be the guy always had to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But now with my friends and stuff, I see it in my school and I see it around. Girls ask guys just as much.
Well, that's good.
Girls are just as aggressive as guys these days.
Well, good. I wish. I wish I was a kid.
I predict that that will not stay the same. When the girls in the process of becoming women learn that this fun thing results in babies and diapers and responsibilities, and so I think it's pretty natural for the female to be a little more guarded about this.
Well, guarded, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that she shouldn't be guarded. I'm not saying that she shouldn't choose who she wants to say yes to.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is that she should be the one to initiate
as much, yeah.
as much as.
But it does. What you're saying, what I want to supplement what you're saying, is everything you've been talking about so far sounds like the life of the single. And I think you want to also supplement in married life.
Well, I said, even
in married life, I mean, the husband perhaps might always have to risk, well, how about it, or whatever, ask the 150 steps or whatever there are. If after you're married, you still have got this role, then you ought to go back and examine, hey, isn't this part of the package?
You do.
And
many
couldn't,
men,
couldn't either initiate.
Many men say that when they're married, they still have to initiate. And that if, by chance, their wife does initiate, they feel like they're in a position where they can't say no. Because if they do say no...
It'll be the last time.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this stuff goes into marriage and families. And he says this is stuff you should teach... You know, your children. You should teach your daughters how to initiate intimacy.
Not something that mothers usually want to encourage.
Well, that's what he's saying. You know, he talks about the catch 22 for boys. I said it yesterday. I think I might have said it wrong. But the catch 22 for boys is that. You have to, in order to get close to a woman, you have to prove that you're trustworthy. And a way of proving that you're trustworthy is letting her know that you're not interested in sex, you know? But then if you want sex, somewhere you gotta let them know that you're interested in sex. But if you do, you've blown it, you know? So it's kind of that catch. The catch 22 that boys have to live with, and he's saying that if girls are taught to be responsible for their sexual initiation, for initiating sex, that it'll take that catch 22 away, and it'll become more of a mutual thing, you know, rather than this thing of boys always having to initiate it, and then when it doesn't happen, getting angry. Frustrated.
Yes, but in the past, there's always been a situation where boys are definitely almost always up for, you know, interested in sex, whereas girls head saying, yeah, but it's not just a momentary thing. I have consequences afterward. I have to deal with it. The guy may be gone. So if you start teaching girls, yeah, anytime you feel a sexual urge, well, you like the guy, go ahead.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that girls should initiate sexual behavior. Girls should initiate as much of that as they want. You know, if girls only want to kiss, a girl should say, you know, let's kiss and nothing else. That's as far as I'm going. You know, or if the girl just wants to, whatever. She can initiate it at any level that she wants to. Now, the reputation is, oh, guys, they want more than that. If you kiss them, you're going to go more and that kind of thing. But once again, that's turning guys into monsters. You know, I mean, but you know, you have to, women have to be responsible for what they want sexually, not just for what they don't want sexually. And that way, there's more of a, you know, you have more power. Women have more power if they can do that.
If you're saying that in a relationship, you were in a relationship with a guy, say I was a younger girl, I'm married, and I had a relationship with a boyfriend where I would have to take the initiative in making it clear to what degree I'm willing to go or whatever sexually. And so that he is clear about that, and maybe if I just want to neck or kiss a little bit, then I would make that clear, is that what you're saying?
You would make it clear that that's what you wanted. You would also initiate it by saying, you know, let's do this now, but this is all I want.
I think there was a sexual harassment stuff going on that's starting to happen on our campuses and stuff where the girls are saying, you know, I've got to initiate it, otherwise you guys are afraid because of the risk of sexual harassment. I want to get back to at the beginning, when you were talking about the women being killers. Do you think is that changing at all? I mean, are there, with the women in the marketplace now, some of them earning big bucks and bringing home bacon. Are there men who are marrying killers now?
80% of top female executives marry up, meaning they marry men who make more money than they do. Yeah. So that's really not changing. There are exceptions, of course, you know, and of people who marry each other where the woman makes more than the man and that sort of thing. But generally, women marry up, and society is set up in such a way that if a woman doesn't marry up, what's it called when a woman doesn't marry up?
Failure.
Settling.
Settling for
it. Settling. Cool. If a woman is middle-aged and she doesn't marry up, then it's called settling. She marries, if a woman's a teacher and she marries a plumber or she marries a janitor or something like that, it's called settling. Because the ideal is that women are always supposed to marry up, you know. So, and some of these things are changing. I'm not saying that these things aren't changing. He wrote this book in 93. So some of these things are changing, but they're not changing at the extent that we would hope they would change. Some of them look like they're changing when people are in their teens and 20s, but once they get out of college and you have to make a living, it clicks back into the same old thing, you know, and people, you know, if for those of us who were young in the 60s and we had all these ideals, or even in the 40s, you had all these ideals and boom, all of a sudden you're middle aged and you realize you've lived the same life your parents have lived, you know, so that's what I'm saying. Another thing he says is that the beautiful prince never marry the conscientious objector. The beautiful princes never married the conscientious objector. The beautiful princes always marry the warrior or some kind of a slayer or a prince or someone who could go out and literally was willing to fight to protect and, you know, and kill for her. I should put up the four P's, which are men in our society. What we're supposed to do is pay, pursue, protect, and perform. Those are the four things that society has set up that men are supposed to do. And if men can't do these things, then our access to women and resources are diminished. the further are we are we're away from paying, pursuing, protecting, and performing, the lesser our resources are. And that, you know, people may balk at men's interest in beautiful women, but society has addicted men to beautiful women. You know, from before the age of consent, men are number one addicted to violence, and we are addicted to beautiful women. Society addicts men to beautiful women, of course, everybody knows that, through advertising and that sort of thing. But society also addicts men to violence. Men are bribed into being violent, because when you're violent, you get the beautiful women. The cheerleaders are not sure running around in short outfits, jumping up and down, cheering for chess players. You know, there are no cheerleaders at debates. You know, the cheerleaders are out on the field where guys are being knocked around and hurt. So, you know, so that gets back to, you know, if you want to fix men, fix cheerleaders. You know, either have no cheerleaders or have cheerleaders at the chess team, and that sort of thing. Or the non-contact sports. There are no cheerleaders at swimming meets. You know.
I think I agree with most of what you said. I find like in our own marriage, I think it's a pretty good marriage, but probably the thing I tend to get most jealous of is time. You just never feel like you have enough time. And I think many males feel like business and most occupations are so competitive that it's not just doing your job, it's only get the next job if you've done it better than somebody else. So that it always demands so much time that even sessions like this and stuff always end up having to be shunted to the side. You can't develop the rest of you, and you always, you know you're one-sided, but you feel like, I can't do anything about it, I'm trapped. And you feel like women have more opportunities to take some time to develop some of those other aspects of their life.
He talks about three options of men. That's another way to fix men, is to allow men three options. The three options of women is to work full-time, to work part-time and raise the children, or to raise the children. The men's three options are work full-time, work full-time, work full-time. And he says in our society, those are kind of the options that are laid out for men in our society. And he talks about, if you want to fix men, have a society, men need to protest and fight for a society that says that men can have those three options, just like women can have those three options. It's, yes.
It's actually more of a choice that's happening for men, not as much as for women, but they still, it is a choice for the man who feels strong about it, just as long as he ranges it up front, so to speak, before they're married or before he's,
Well, it's happening, but glaciers are melting, too.
Right.
And we've yet to see this portrayed in the media. We've yet to see it portrayed positively in the media, where the man stays home with the children and have that option. And that was a comedy, So you have to pay attention to what's comedy and what's drama. Because it's when it becomes drama, it's serious, But...
It's happening more than we think, I think. Because a lot of my friends, the wife is the breadwinner and the husband stays home.
Okay.
And it's the 40s generation. They're not listening to what, I guess, the norm was.
Well, yeah, okay. If it's happening, that's fine, all the better. But he says that men need to stand up and say, this is what we want. But the reality for men, what the reality for men is? Is that if you stand up and do that your connection with resources, your ability to get more resources is diminished.
This is Godfire.
Yeah.
He stood up for his kids and lost the resources.
Yeah. And also, you know, young women, younger women who are not married are not exactly turned on by men that say, you know, I want to stay home and watch the children part time. You know, they're much more interested in men who say, you know, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be, you know, the kind of stuff that provides resources so the women can have the three options that they have.
That's not true. All the time, I'm with my friends at least. Okay. And then people, I mean, because I'm that age group, I guess you could. And my friends, it's like, that's something that was to be admired, in my opinion. You know, it's like, oh, he's not so macho that he doesn't realize that, you know, guys can do things like that too. And he's, I don't know, sensitive enough to care about the kids and doing things like that. And he doesn't want to run off and be a doctor, you know. He'll be willing to stay home and help with the housework and help with the kids.
Okay.
And that's what I mean, that's my friends are all, whoa, dream guy.
Yeah, okay. I think, didn't you say you're a junior in high school?
I'm a senior.
As you get a little closer to
money.
Yeah, it, some of that.
And well, let's not lay that on her, because that may not happen.
Well, let's hope.
That may not happen. Let's hope that that doesn't happen to your generation.
I think what's going to happen is women grow up and begin to feel like they have a place in the job market. They can earn a salary that's supportable for a family. Then they are going to be able to relax more to allow men to stay home with the children. In the past, women didn't get paid as well as the men did. Trying to live on a woman's salary unless she was professional, then it was going to be always hard times, you know, and push, am I going to have enough money to raise my family? And the woman's concern is going to be, again, if she wants children, to make sure that the children can be provided for, food, and so on and so forth. So she's caught between, you know, wanting to go out there to work, let him stay home with the kids, but can she earn enough money to allow that to happen? And does he have the skills to take care of the kids the way she would want it done, the nurturing feeling. Some men can, some men can't.
Oh, definitely.
But
some women can't. That's why.
You know, I found that some women just, you know, are so sure that men can't nurture children, that men's way of nurturing is different than women's way of nurturing, and that they don't let the men try it. But on another thing, is that women make less than men, but men's ability to earn money is directly related to men's ability to take physical risk. And we covered this yesterday in disposable men, but men's ability to be firefighters, to be policemen, to be garbage collectors, to be miners, to be loggers, until women are willing, and it's not just women, until society is willing, and men have to fight for this too, to allow women to work in those high-risk professions, and by high-risk, risk of death, risk of being maimed or disabled in some way, that the women will never make the money that men make, and men need to fight as well as women to get women into those professions as well. But society is about protecting women from this kind of work.
When we were on the boat coming up, the guy said 50% of the firefighters were women now.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. Weren't you? Did you hear that? I'm just going, whoa, because from what they said, they were out there 3 days without food and water. They, you know, when this first happened, all the fires happened.
And I noticed that where was it that the 9 firefighters were killed?
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't 3 or 4 of them women?
Yeah, yes.
You know, and I'm not happy because women got killed, but I'm saying that we need to accept the risk, you know, that women need to risk too. Because the jobs that women are in that are the low paying jobs are jobs, number one, there's absolutely no risk, there's flex time. There's, you know, you can dress up to go to work, and basically that anybody can feel. And if anybody is willing to feel them, then what they pay is lower. But the jobs that involve the risk, the more money you make in this country, unless you're educated, involves the amount of risk that you're willing to make. also it involves the amount of, if you're willing to move, if you're willing to, you know, if you're willing to move, and also if you're willing to risk boredom. A lot of lawyers and attorneys get paid big money and get all kinds of perks, but a lot of that is to bribe them so they'll stick around and do some of the most boring work that there is on the planet, shuffling papers back and forth. They wear nice suits, they go out to lunch, but their work is boring. Did you have your hand up?
Well, by and large, I think we pay people to do what we don't want to do ourselves. But what we're talking about, I think, is the need for change and change. And as soon as we start talking about the need for change, somebody says, well, we'll change. Mm-hmm. And then pretty quick, go back to the need for more change. In the process of changing, I think we should remind ourselves we're always walking on new ice. And so we're tentative about it. There's something else I think would really fit into your thesis. The men who do it, the men who start to play this new role, whom you describe as maybe dream guys, these guys are lonely men. I'm thinking of one guy in particular, Tessa's. He takes care of the kids. Boy, and he gets them to the ball games, and he does all this stuff, and he's just textbook. He does most of the cooking. He just does all. He's a hell of a good wife, is what he is. But how many friends does he have amongst the men? He lives a very lonely life.
Yeah.
Most other guys just can't relate to this. And they're maybe threatened.
I've got a friend who's married to a woman obstetrician who works at undercover. Mm-hmm. You know what he does? He takes care of kids 10 months out of the year. And the other 2 months out of the year, he has a salmon fishing boat in Alaska. He risks his life out there. He doesn't have to. She makes enough money. He doesn't have to do this. The only way he can live with himself is to go out there and be on the high seas. And he's on the ocean for 2 months, risking his life salmon fishing. It's dangerous work. He gets paid and everything else. And he clears about $15,000
for 2 years.
Just because of this stuff.
So, yeah, I have a friend who does it too, and I agree with Tom. He says, it's lonely work. I call him up. He says, boy, it's good to hear from me. There's no one to talk man talk to. Mm-hmm. But he says, on the other hand, you get to meet a lot of women.
Yeah, but you're married.
Yeah, we're married. Yeah. He just wants to talk to
them. I was self-employed at home for a number of years, and it seems like it's more of an accident in many ways that you have a profession you can do that in with my computer. And I was one of only two men to go to all the cross-country soccer and track games. My kids in high school, but it was a great thrill to be there. There were two men at the games, and sometimes just me, but and a lot of wives. It was sort of lonely.
This is old stuff. You know, I want to remind you that this is old stuff. This is not new stuff that we're just dealing with in the latter part of the 20th century. This is old stuff. Scripturally, even. You know, remember the story of Jacob? Jacob had to marry Leah, the cow, before he married Rachel, the ewe lamb, you know. So, you know, it shows what men will do for beauty. You know, that men will sacrifice for beauty. You know, so men being addicted to beauty is nothing new. I mean, that's old stuff. Men sacrificing their lives to protect people. Our religions are loaded with it. You know, Jesus, a man, sacrificed his life to protect all of humanity. You know, you talk about inclusive language, which is very important to me, is very important to Golden Village, but I've yet to hear somebody, you know, I've heard people say God and women will say, no, God, she. But I've yet to hear someone say the devil, he, and hear a woman say, no, the devil, she. So he says that's something, you know, you need to, you know, if you're going to be inclusive, go all out. Include the devil in that as well, you know. So
I'm taking that back to church with me.
Okay. So this is very old stuff to keep in mind. Let's see, what else have I not accused? He talks about rape, and everybody is aware of women being raped. But he says we need to be aware, if we want to fix men, society needs to be aware that when a man is accused, falsely accused of rape, that he is virtually raped, because his career is in the toilet. His reputation as a person goes down the drain. So we need to be aware of both. And what we covered yesterday, there are many instances of women accusing men falsely of rape. And I'm not saying that it happens. I'm not here to deny female experience or at all, or female reality at all. What I am saying is that if a man is accused, then women lie about rape. That there are instances of women lying about rape, and there are percentages, and there are reasons why women lie about rape. And whenever we deny women their sexuality and force women to pretend that they're not sexual when they are, or force women to act innocent when they're not, we put women in a position where they have to lie. They feel like they have to lie about their sexuality. And reasons why women lie about being raped is because you know, they don't want people to know that they've been sexual on their own accord, or because they're ashamed of having been sexual, or because they're trying to get money out of another person, or because they're afraid that they, you know, someone has found out they've gotten a disease, a venereal disease or some disease, and they are STD as it's called, and they want to lie about it and say, you know, we put women in a position where their sexuality has to be lied about, you know, and this is the problem.
Well, they could also be fooling themselves.
Well, yeah, but you're right, whatever the reason is, we need to be aware that when we force women to deny their sexuality and to pretend that they're not sexual when they are sexual, we force women into this kind of stuff.
Berlin, I think we've also become increasingly sensitive about not just redistribution of wealth, but redistribution of power. And those of us who have been in the Enneagram class, think about the eight. Women have ostensibly been without power, and children have ostensibly been without power. Not every kid is happy with that. Kids like to have power. Women would like someone really to have power. And I just want to put in a word. If somebody would accuse me of child molestation in addition to rape, either one, I'd have more trouble with child molestation, I think, because if you question me, I know rape maybe, but child molestation. And I feel terribly cheated. I can't put kids on my lap and play with them the way I want to. And I've just had a feeling, just a sense, that it's an expression of power. It's an opening to the new avenue of power. Boy, you think you're powerful? I know how to topple you.
And for the kids, you mean? For the kids and the women?
When we go to church, after church, you know, we're all over having the happy time of the meal, whatever. And some of the little kids now have been programmed so that they can't talk to anybody.
Yeah, right.
I not only can't put my hand on their head or whatever, but they can't even say hello to me because they've been instructed. You can't talk to strange people.
Right,
like,
yeah,
say,
right.
Kind of strange.
Even in a state.
Okay,
the parents want to protect their kids.
Yeah, that's perfectly understandable.
And the young kids, you know, you can't say, well, you can talk to a stranger in this situation, but not. You know, you can't. The kids aren't going to discern. But I agree. I was helping in a nursery one time because she wanted to take lots of lunch and her staff. So the church people came in just at lunchtime for an hour to take the kids in their nap. And this one time I told him to sleep, and I asked him, I'd like to stroke his back so he could go to sleep. And I heard him say, she's a stranger.
stranger. And I said to him, yes, I am a stranger, but so-and-so, the lady who runs the place, has asked me to come here to be with you, and it's all right. And I told the lady about that, and she could talk to her mother. But I felt so sorry for this poor little kid. He couldn't relax. I mean, here's everybody there, and there's a lot of adults. So it was a very safe situation, but he was uptight.
But relating to your thesis that here and your author's thesis, I think part of it, in addition to covering up one's own sexuality, part of it is it's an avenue of power.
Women's power comes from, I said this yesterday too, women's power comes from their perceived weakness. And men's weakness come from our perceived power.
Nicely.
What I mean by that is that women, there's a lot of power in women contending that they're innocent victims. They can destroy families, they can wreak havoc in the workplace, they can do all kinds of things by saying that they were, by proclaiming that they need protection or they were not protected and something happened to them. Men's weakness is in the fact that we walk around pretending that we're powerful when we're not. And we keep everything closed inside. He says this many times in the book, a number of times in the book, women can't hear what men don't say. A lot of people perceive us as having power simply because we don't say anything. You know, we don't express our powerlessness. Men are powerless against women in a relationship where the man feels he has to make all the advances sexually. That's a powerless feeling for men, for a lot of men to think, if anything's going to happen here, I have to do it. But if I do it, she may think, I'm coming on too strong, and she may reject me altogether. That's a powerless feeling. It's a powerless feeling thinking, you know, the only reason my kids like me is because I can pay for their college education. Or that I have to pay for their cars, or that I'm divorced, I only get to see my kids on the weekends, but I still have to pay child support. That's powerless stuff for men. And what this book talks about is that men need to look at what's powerlessness for them. You cannot deny that men have a certain amount of powerlessness, and that women have powerlessness too. Society harps on women's powerlessness, but society hasn't touched on men's powerlessness. Society only likes to pretend that men have power, you know. So that's one of the things. Can I do two more things and then we can open it up for discussion?
Sure. Okay.
Two more things. One is that a lot of men, their only power in relationships is just not to get in one. Just to stay out of it altogether, because you step into a relationship and all of a sudden you have all these demands made on you. Before a man and woman gets married, they're fairly equal. But the moment they get married, her three options and his three options become obligations. You know, he's gotta take on more stuff. He's gotta take on, if his wife wants to work part-time, he still has to work full time. If he has children, he's got to take that on. And men in marriage take on more and more financial stuff. And a lot of men just find it easier to just not get into it at all. And the other thing is that I've heard, he says a lot of women talk about wanting a wife, and it's kind of a joke, wanting a wife, mm-hmm. and everybody wants a wife. And he says, you can have a wife if you're willing to pay the financial responsibilities that it takes to have a wife, and which goes back to stuff that I mentioned. So if you want to fix men, you fix men by making sure that the things that I mentioned here are met. So that's all of my little talk, and so we can open it up for discussions. You had a question?
Well, I was just going to say that I think that I know women of my age were taught, girls of my age, I think were taught to manipulate men. And I don't think men are taught to really manipulate women the way, and I don't know if this is still true or not.
Spell it out. What do you mean by manipulating?
Well, I
mean coy, you mean, and sort of...
And I think using sexuality as a ploy to...
I don't think they can anymore, sexual revolution. Sex is too easy to get from other people.
Yeah.
It could be. I don't think that's we don't do that anymore. The Cinderella thing is gone. We don't have that anymore.
Well, that's not quite right. He says that women's power is from 16 to 24. That's when women are at their physical peak, as far as men are concerned. Mm-hmm. And that's when women have their power. Men's power is from 45 to 55. Mm-hmm. And that's because that's when men are at their financial peak. So these, what do they call them, September, May romances, there's a reason for it. He's getting exactly what he wants. She's getting exactly what she wants, you know. And in those cases, I think the manipulative stuff still goes on. He says one thing you can do to fix men is to focus on and talk about what's good about men. You don't hear enough of that in our society with what's good about men. You know, right now men are looked upon as predators for a lot, or people who are destroying the planet to make money and that kind of thing. And he says, one of the things you can do is focus on what's good about men. Not what's good about men as opposed to women, but what's good about men.
What about the trend, the clear trend away from what you described, the older man and the younger woman? There's clearly a trend in the opposite direction now, where there are many older women connected up with younger men, mm-hmm. where that is reversing again the idea that the male is the breadwinner, the financial support.
Well, usually in those cases, finances is not an issue because the women are usually wealthy in those cases.
So that's what I'm saying. It's reversed.
Yes. And as everybody knows, if you got money, you can do just about what you want. You can marry someone 80 or you can marry someone 20. If you're financially secure,
you can hire it done.
Yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. It doesn't
but
matter.
That's still not a guarantee.
No.
Well, no.
Yeah, no matter what human nature being lived is, you're always going to have some people who think they can buy happiness, be it a woman or a man, and some people are going to think that that's what they want. So
but we can't assume that they're not happy.
Right, true.
You know, if an 80-year-old woman marries a 40-year-old man, we can't assume that she's not happy or that he's not happy.
Maybe
he may be happy. I mean, society being the way it is, I mean, when you think about society, there are very few instances where it's, in our society, where it's okay to be sexual. If the person's too old, it's suspect. If the person's too young, it's suspect. If the person is of a different race, it's suspect. If the person's of a different religion, you know, there's very little margin where people say it's okay to be sexual, you know. And what if that your sexual appetites or your idea for what would make you happy sexually is somewhere outside of that margin, you know, which could include a 20-year-old man being sexually stimulated and excited by an 80-year-old woman. You know, you can't say that that's not... It looks funny, but you can't say that.
Do you think this business of... there's a lot of things here that we talked about that might be able to be fixed. Equal opportunity in the marketplace, women's earning power, maybe stuff like that, and men being different. But what about this addiction to sex? I mean, if women have their power between 16 and 24 or whatever, that's clearly... And not sex but beauty. That's clearly related to the time when you know, when they're certainly more beautiful at that time in their lives than 45 to 55.
Is this
addiction to beauty that starts a lot of this stuff? Is that learned or is that in the genes?
Well, like I said, this is old stuff, and that's in the genes. Some of that stuff's in the genes. I mean, when a woman is at her peak physically, she's at her peak as turn in productive years too. I mean, a lot of our attraction, there's been a couple of major articles in, like a couple of weeks ago, this article in Time about Fidelity, and then U.S. News and World Report had an article on just that very thing. People are attracted to people that look healthy. And one article said that there's even a relationship between a woman's waist and a woman's hips. That if a woman's hips are a third wider than her waist, it number one, it looks healthy, and number two, it's, you know, it triggers some kind of childbearing thing. And all of this stuff plays a part in terms of being, in terms of attraction. So yes, men are attractive to beautiful women, but men are also attractive to women who look reproductive, like they can, you know, they still have reproductive years left.
It's kind of a visual estrus.
It's a visual thing. It's visual, the same way with women. Women are attracted to certain men. Women are attracted to men who look healthy. In the days before you went to the doctor and stuff, it was kind of like looking at a horse. You could tell if a horse was happy, I mean, was healthy. It's the same way with men and women. You need to be able to glance at someone and tell if that person looks healthy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, if a person is overweight, they don't look healthy. If a person's too old, they don't look healthy. So there's an age thing in there where, you know, and that, a lot of that's biological, you know. But we can stop some of the addiction to a certain type of beauty. There's a lot of women out there who are healthy and look good, but who do not match the standard of beauty. We can stop that. We can say we refuse to have this in our schools, we refuse to have it on TV. We can work with that.
You know, this is going to be difficult, though, because, like I say, biologically, women and men are attracted to each other, and I do believe that it triggers in your mind this idea that he looks manly, healthy, he's going to, you know, be a good provider, mm-hmm. mentally, Becca is going to be a healthy type of thing. We can counterbalance that with education, realizing that, hey, he may be Mr. Macho, but he's not going to be around maybe to support you emotionally, the kids, and so on and so forth. So you may learn as a young girl, say, for example, that physical appearance isn't everything, and that actuality, maybe someone who's more intellectual inside his head, is going to be a better husband or father than someone who is physically. But society and media advertising goes on the physical.
Yeah.
And how are you going to ever legislate to the advertisers? Now, we have to be equal here. We have to show the women being attracted to intellectual man as well as the physical man, and so on and so forth.
The Pepsi commercial.
I don't know if you can ever do that.
I know you can teach your children that advertising is just a lie.
We do need to do that, but as long as advertising is effective, whatever they do in advertising, and we allow it, and something that's hard to regulate, you're going to have it. They're going to do whatever sells their product.
But they have been showing a lot of the 40 and 50 year old women. Look at Raquel Welch. She's more beautiful now than she's ever been. And she's 50.
To
me, I don't see why a man, to me as a woman, I think she's more beautiful now than she was then. So it's hard for me to understand this, but I think you're right. Because remember that saying where men don't want you to change, but you want them to? I think that goes back to that, don't you think? That they really want you to stay that person he married, and don't change an inch, and don't be different, and don't grow, and just, you know.
Well, one of the things in marriage is that if you want a marriage to go bad, if the woman gains 50 pounds, 20 to 50 pounds after marriage, most men are dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. If the man takes a drop in his financial status, the women are dissatisfied.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, there is a certain connection to men. And look, men are very visual. You know, we like the way women look, and that's a visual thing.
See,
I wonder, though, if some of this sounds so foreign to me, and I realize that it must vary a great deal around which social circles or which intellectual circles you find yourself.
Because, what do you mean? What
I've been around a university environment most of my life, and what you're describing, where, I mean, there are as many women as men professionals now within university settings. It's just something that wouldn't occur to me to reduce some of the interactions between men and women to the same position as is described in the book. I don't know. I haven't experienced that. It's more. I mean, I'm just more accustomed to the quality.
Yes.
I'm not sure that university is worried about the marketplace.
No.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. Are you talking about all of this?
Even economics,
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all sort of on the same
economic area. And so for me, this is foreign because all my friends are, the wife is working at $70,000 to $100,000 a year jobs and the husband's home. I mean, I don't see this now in the 90s.
I think that it is linked to economic because it's linked to education. When you get into higher education, you begin to realize, gee, he's Mr. Macho over there, but he's also a philanderer. This guy over here is really not Mr. Macho, but he's got the intelligence, he's a knowledge provider. There's no physical risk. Yeah. So
that's why people go into education. They don't have to deal with physical risk.
You begin to balance some of these things off. Where I'm saying in your lower economic, they're still maybe saying he hasn't got the education to get a high paying job, but he's blue collar. Blue collar, he has the strength to go out and earn a good living.
Right. But
I don't have the education to earn a big salary, so I'm going to find somebody who does, or I'm going to be living on welfare or something like that.
But
this.
One of the things that can get in there and mess that up is divorce. You get divorced and your economic status takes a big drop.
Right.
And then you're right in that position of the people that he's talking about. Mm-hmm. You know. So it's
for that, I mean, for the upper income.
If you're both married and both of you are earning $60,000-$70,000 a year and everything's going on la di da, and then boom, you get divorced, then you know, you're in that same position where even if you got a job, your options are gone. The option of working or staying home with the children part-time, working part-time or staying home altogether, that option is gone.
But that's the risk that anyone
Part of this, is to broaden our vista, and polo players just don't understand. The world of polo players is different from the world of bowlers. And I've been in advertising, and I've been specifically in advertising testing, and this has nothing to do with what people should do or supposed to do or ought to do. I want to rescue Bob a little bit. He just told the truth. He talked about beauty in a particular dimension. What's going to work for most people? What's quick in advertising? Talk about quick and dirty.
What you said about Raquel Welch, I can tell you, I feel the same way. That she's a beautiful woman right now. You pull most men in the country, they'll take her years ago.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
See, that to us, I'm used to
your perspective now.
You're looking for different things. Men are looking, it's not even what we're looking for. If you see a good-looking woman go by, and boom, something hits you in the gut, and that's it. Okay. You don't care.
The age doesn't matter.
None of them don't do that.
But
women do it in terms of men. I've seen women, I've seen women, and you've all seen women who go after a certain type of man. You know that if a man walks in this village that fits whatever that is women looking for, I don't know what it is, that he has women lined up. You know that. You've all seen that. I don't know what it is, but you've seen it. Right?
I think different men appeal to different women. Yeah. I don't think the same. You used to think. Tall, dark, and
handsome. Hump doesn't appeal to me.
No.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, to men, different types of women appeal to different men, especially on a socioeconomic level. They found that men on a lower socioeconomic level like heftier women. Mm-hmm. And then the higher you go up socioeconomically, the thinner you like your